Stu Does America.
Follow the show on YouTube, youtube.com/Stu Does America. Be sure to subscribe there and hit the bell for notifications so you know whenever we go live or do whatever we're doing. Joy Pullman is going to join us. She's going to explain how bad this whole Minnesota daycare situation is. The latest DEI-inspired Barbie doll is out. It's fascinating. Maybe you want to get one for yourself. We'll tell you all about it. But we're going to start by doing the Karen Tafada. Yes, the Karen Tafada is here. And this is, of course, a group of spunky, almost exclusively white women out there just fighting against the Nazis, of ICE. And I guess that's how our society works these days. Protests are spreading nationwide. Anti-ICE protests spreading. Mounting outrage over an ICE agent's killing of a woman in Minneapolis spilled into streets across the country on Saturday as crowds of protesters mobilized against what they called the excesses of the Trump administration's mass deportation campaign. The ICE Out for Good campaign. It's catchy. Seriously, ICE Out for Good. How did they come up with that? It held demonstrations in small towns and major cities, including some that have been central targets of President Trump's immigration crackdown. Remember that term, immigration crackdown. That's what President Trump is doing. We'll tell you a little bit more about that coming up. In light of the killing in Minneapolis and other shooting in Portland, Oregon, where Border Patrol agents shot and wounded two people in a car, just two people. Just the two people, no negative ties about those two people. Certainly they were wonderful, including the organizers of the No Kings and Hands Off demonstrations last year. They called for a weekend of nationwide mobilization as if they had anything else to do with their lives other than call for such a thing. Now, before we go on, let's show you this video broke right after the last time we did a show on this, I think. This is the video from the officer that wound up shooting the woman in the car in Minneapolis. And a couple, you know, maybe we'll go through. There's a bunch of claims the left made about this incident that were disproved by this video. Now, I will say we are a bit in that situation where most people who believed it was a justified shooting are still saying that. Most people who believed it wasn't are still saying that. Obviously, no amount of information, no amount of facts, no amount of evidence is going to change anybody's opinion on anything. Like, that's just the society we live in at this point. And, you know, what are you going to do? We're here. We got to deal with it. But I will say, one of the things that they talked about was how these women were panicking, how they were just innocent bystanders that were there. They just happened to be in that area. All that stuff seems to go out of the window with this video. I'll walk you through it if you haven't seen it, and we'll walk you through it on podcast. The officer, again, gets out of his car, walks up to the car that's clearly blocking the middle of the road, not just stopped there innocently. The woman is in there. She is kind of talking trashy, officer. You'll hear her voice in a second.
I'm not mad.
Comes it back. Her spouse is there.
Change our plates every morning, just so you know. It'll be the same plate when you come talk to us later.
Sarcastic, talking trash, think they're really funny. He goes to the other window.
You want to come at us? I say go get yourself some lunch, big boy.
Go get yourself some lunch, big boy. Then she goes over to the car to get in the car. Wife kind of just says, I'm going away. Blatantly runs right into the officer. Now, you could tell that from other situations, but obviously he was hit. I mean, this is now, I think, pretty clear that he had a right and a reasonable belief that this person was trying to take him out. Whether she was or not, we don't know. That's not the legal standard. The legal standard is only how he would have interpreted that information. And I think quite clearly that is obvious. There's so much to say about the video, and we'll go into more of that here in just a second. But Kristi Noem is signaling a federal surge in Minnesota. What a catastrophe this state is. I mean, honestly, like, this is a purple state, too. Like, a lot of times we see these things happening in, like, bright blue states where there's no hope of changing up who is the governor or who are the senators. Minnesota, it could happen. Minnesota was the next closest state, basically, outside of the six swing states in 2024 that Trump wound up sweeping. The next one in line was Minnesota. And, you know, it's not out of the question. We have seen Republicans get elected in Minnesota before. It is possible given how terrible the situation is. Constant strife, constant catastrophes for basically every second Tim Walz has been in office, at least. It's fascinating. They haven't thrown this guy out already. There's so many scandals, so much fraud, so much strife, constantly horrible interactions going on between the police and the government and protesters. And it's just I get that it's cold and it might be everybody's just in a constant state of misery because of it. But man, what the hell is going on up there? It really is fascinating. Here's Kristi Noem talking about the situation.
I'll remind everyone, Maria, that every single thing that I've said has been factual about what's been going on in Minneapolis, what's been going on in Minnesota, and with the incident that we had where we had a tragic loss of life. These law enforcement officers are trained to be in situations that are dangerous, and they rely on that training each and every day to make the right decisions. And that's what I'm so grateful for, is that we have professionals that stepped up and took an oath to serve this country. The American people support them in that. It's really, really horrific that we have elected officials that are using this as an opportunity to divide, using this to promote an agenda that fundamentally would take away our freedoms and our liberties in this country. And Governor Walz's corruption has been exposed. It's been exposed for years. He's being held accountable to it. So he's trying to divert the attention away from him and his failed leadership.
That's very true. I mean, it's definitely what he's attempting to do, even though he's running away from his race. This is his attempt, is to try to hopefully, get people on his side because they don't like ICE or whatever. And that is, going to draw the attention away from him. Now, this is the same thing that Jacob Fry is doing. All these people in Minneapolis are trying to do basically the same thing, which is get people stirred up even more. And you're getting these crowds out here like this. And, here's an example. Clay Travis posts, so crazy white chicks just show up and scream at ICE agents trying to provoke them and engage in violence. This is their entire goal and basically the entire Democratic Party base. By the way, Dan Andros, our friend of the show, writes, Karen Tafada? Is that what we're talking about? It is kind of a Karen Tafada, which is a bizarre thing. You know, it's such a strange way of living your life. You know, I think sometimes of a piece of stand-up from Norm Macdonald late in his life where, and I'll butcher this, but, you know, he's dead. He's not really going to be too bothered by me butchering it. But he said, it was something to the effect of, like, I had a friend who said, hey, you know, that Bill Cosby situation's pretty crazy. The worst part about it was the hypocrisy. And Norm Macdonald said, I think, actually, I disagree. The worst part about it was all the rapes. And so I don't want to be the Norm Macdonald joke there. Because the worst part about this is a woman losing her life for no reason, for just empty nonsense. So a woman living, losing her life, these officers being harassed. There are many bigger problems than this, but let me give you what I would say in that joke is the worst thing about this situation, which is the nonsense of it all. The fact that, like, what we're looking at there, what you saw in the video, was essentially a couple of women turning their little internet personas into real life, taking their social media sass out into the real world to see how it plays. I mean, she is seconds away. This woman is seconds away from saying, go get some lunch, big boy. And seconds later, her wife is dead. Think about that for a second. For what? You didn't stop anything. You didn't stop any illegal immigrant from being deported. By the way, we will talk about who these illegal immigrants are that are being deported in these operations in just a couple of minutes. That's a segment you're not going to want to miss. But just the emptiness of it. Now, we just live in a society that just encourages this type of thing. This is, there's a difference between online tweeting and real life tweeting. And that's what you got there in that video. It was real life tweeting. Oh, here's a little sassy line I can give you, officer. I'm going to be sarcastic. I'm going to laugh. I'm going to act like I'm a badass. And what happened? Your wife is dead. It's social media brought to life, everybody. Isn't this a brave new world that we can all celebrate? And it's important to note, this Karen Tafada, if you will, is being brought to life by people like Tim Walz, by people like Ilhan Omar, by people like Jacob Fry, who, in reaction to all of this, encourage more of it. Say these people, I mean, Jacob Fry has to say F words to show you he's tough. But they come out and they swear and they look tough and they play to their audiences. They do exactly the thing that their stupid social media following wants. And you see, this is the same thing between, you know, Ilhan Omar and Jacob Fry sound different on this, but they're both doing exactly the same thing, which is playing to their audience. Whatever their audience expects from them, whatever their audience wants them to hear, is what they bring to you. And that, what is brought to people is that they should be out in the streets obstructing federal officers. Is this a good idea? You know, it sounded like a good idea to that woman when she was saying, go get some lunch, big boy. I don't think it sounded like such a good idea while the car was crashing with her dead wife in it down the street. This is serious business, guys. This is not social media. This is not, you know, they say Twitter isn't real life. You better hope it doesn't turn into real life, because this is the result of it. You have a woman who is maniacally focused on making villains out of these officers. So she guns her freaking SUV at one of them and expects it to turn out okay. I got news for you. When you gun it at a cop or an immigration officer, what you can expect is what she got. Unfortunately, that's the truth. We can all hope here that that wouldn't have turned out that way. And I do hope, I wish it didn't turn out that way. By the way, most of these incidents don't. Most of the time, officers wind up figuring out a way to not do this. But of course, it does happen sometimes, and it is absolutely defensible in the law. Now, there's a law, Tim Walz signed a law into operation in Minnesota that is going to give this officer a very positive defense when it comes to whatever charges they're going to file. That's not to say that he handled it perfectly. Maybe he did, maybe he didn't. You can argue that both ways. But at the end of the day, she accelerated. We showed you the video last week of the wheel turning while it still turned at the officer. She guns it at the officer. The only reason the officer isn't struck down and seriously injured or run over completely is because she slips on the ice as she's turning the car. And the reaction from every official in Minnesota is to encourage more of this, to say we have to get these people out. We have to go out and rise up and protest to stop them. Look, I want to tell you in a minute what these people are trying to do, who they're trying to defend with all of this. But honestly, at the end of the day, I don't think it really matters to them. They want to show off. You know, one of the stats I always was fascinated by early on in the Green agenda days was the number one reason that people give for buying a Toyota Prius when they first came out was not fuel efficiency. It was not the technology. It was not the environment. It was not global warming. It was, I want people to see that I'm a good person. I want people to see that it says something about me that I would buy a car like this. This is the same mental state apparently we're all still in. This is a terrible idea, and you should stay, whether you agree or disagree with how this incident went down, the more people who are out there obstructing federal officers, the more likely another one of these things is going to happen. And then who's at fault for that? You can sit here and yell at the officers and say they're at fault at it, but I will tell you, 99% of people who have an SUV coming at them are going to do the same thing. That's just the truth. And I think at the end of the day, the courts are going to find that way. You can argue whether he was right or not. And half the country apparently disagrees. But if in reality they were in that situation, they'd agree fully. You have to do something to stop that. The other part about this is we're getting told that, you know, ICE are basically SS officers, right? They're out there terrorizing people, beating them up, stealing them out of their homes, doing all these terrible things to them. And that's fascinating to say. But, like, at the end of the day, if you actually believe that, the last thing you do would be out there saying, go get some lunch, big boy. Watch all the World War II movies. That's not what happened. There weren't people out there saying that to Nazis because they actually believed in those times in Germany that those people were terrible, would kill them. Most people were like, holy crap, let's not go anywhere near them. We'll stay silent. They didn't want to make themselves a target. If you believe these officers were like SS agents, you wouldn't be making yourself a target in the first place, unless you have a death wish, which increasingly our politicians are telling people to develop. There's a Chris Rock video that's been going around, which is basically like, hey, you know, you want to avoid getting the crap beaten out of you by officers. One thing you could do is be polite and respectful and not get in their way and not fight and don't be crazy and all of these different things. And, you know, it's a comedy bit, but it makes a point that is pretty much accurate. If you do those things, 99.9% of these situations go away. When you act like you did there, there's a much higher chance that something like this will happen. Now, of course, it wouldn't have happened by them just being a-holes. It wouldn't have happened by them just being sarcastic jerks, unleashing their tweets at officers. That would have just been a situation where nothing happened. It was the car driving at the officer that made this happen. But, you know, you have kids. You have a wife. By the way, a wife that you, for some reason, as she was trying to get in the car, you just sped off. That was a weird approach. Again, if you think you're leaving your wife with SS officers, you'd think you wouldn't just drive away in the middle of all that. But apparently that's what she thought that the right thing was. So the question here is, what does all this mean? Because one thing I'm fascinated about is everyone on the left saying, oh, gosh, I can't believe this. Well, they're taking people out of their homes. They're ripping these innocent mothers and fathers out of their home, these Maryland fathers that are being deported. And what did they do? Nothing, nothing, nothing. We've heard the story a million times. And maybe, if that were the truth, if that were the common story, right, where these are just people who maybe had some immigration paper issues and were actually great citizens and mothers and fathers, they're at PTA all the time. Maybe if that were the situation, you could at least understand some of the outrage. You can't understand driving your car to police officers, but maybe you can understand some of the outrage. I want to tell you, though, instead, who are these people? Who are the people being sucked up in these ICE raids? Who are the people the left is fighting for? Stay tuned. I've got a lot more on this coming up in just a second. We're back discussing the Karen Tafada. Yes, this army of Karens are out there fighting for the illegal immigrants who are great citizens. But are they? Are they? Let's look, instead of just thinking of these generalities, let's look at the actual people being swept up in these immigration raids in places like Minnesota. We start off with, these are going to be some fun names, Shiridorn Paivon. Ah, my favorite Shiridorn Paivon, a delicious dish. What did he do? Well, he's a Laotian illegal immigrant who's convicted of strong-arm sodomy of a boy and strong-arm sodomy of a girl. Equal opportunity offender. Another aggravated sex offense, 9 counts of larceny, unauthorized use of a vehicle, 4 counts of fraud, vehicle theft, 2 counts of drug possession, obstructing justice, possession of stolen property, receiving stolen property, burglary, and check forgery. He also has pending charges for 2 counts of receiving stolen property, flight to avoid prosecution or confinement, and burglary. Yeah, we're out there in the streets protesting on their behalf. Well, it's not just him. How about Tu Vang? Yes, Tu Vang. Here he is. He's adorable. He is a Laotian, another Laotian illegal immigrant, convicted of sexual assault and sodomy of a girl under the age of 13, and, as if that wasn't enough, procuring a child for prostitution. Wonderful. Thank you so much. Then we have Chong Vu. Chong Vu, his name kind of sounds just like an expletive. Ah, Chong Vu. You know? I like that. Chong Vu. Anyway, Chong Vu, another Laotian illegal immigrant, was convicted of the strong-arm rape of a 12-year-old girl and kidnapping of a child with intent to sexually assault her. We okay going out there in the streets, moms, and protesting on Chong Vu's behalf? What I say about that is Chong Vu. You know what I'm saying? Then we have Ji Yang, which actually sounds like a response. Like if we say, Chong Vu, Ji Yang. I mean, Ji Yang. Ji Yang, a wonderful gentleman. Oh, what the hell is going on in Laos? A Laotian illegal immigrant again, convicted of strong arm rape, aggravated assault with a weapon, and strangulation. I don't know. We've been focusing a lot on Somalia. Maybe we should focus on Laos a little bit. We have Pao Chua Zhang. Yes, good old Pao. He says he's a, you're going to be surprised to hear, a Leo. Is that what the, a Laotian illegal immigrant convicted of rape and child fondling. Almost seems quaint compared to some of the others. Then you have Kulor. Kulor is, you're going to be surprised. this has got to be a bit. A Laotian illegal immigrant convicted of rape, rape with a weapon, and sexual assault. Ah, the women from the cul-de-sac out there back in good old Kulor. Sure, he's wonderful. Here's a name. Hernan Cortez Valencia. I can pronounce that one. Hernan Cortez Valencia is a Mexican. There we go. Congratulations to Laos, a Mexican illegal immigrant convicted of sexual assault of a child and DUI. Then we have Abdirashid Adash Elmi. And I am positive I nailed that pronunciation. He is a Somalian illegal immigrant, and he was convicted of homicide. But all the moms from the PTA are out there in the cul-de-sac making sure they know their voice is heard to protect him. Then you got Gilberto Salguero Landeverde. Good old Gilberto is a Salvadorian illegal immigrant convicted of three counts of homicide. Three counts of homicide. Landaverde has had a deportation order since June 2025, but that's under the Trump administration, so you can't count that, of course. Gabriel Figueroa Gama, wonderful gentleman from Mexico, Mexican illegal immigrant, convicted of homicide, and he was previously deported already way back in 2002 under that Bush regime. Then you have Galuak Michael Rotguy. I'm just calling him Michael. Michael is a Sudanese illegal immigrant convicted of, you guessed it, homicide. Then we have Ty Lohr. Ty Lohr was a, you're going to be shocked to hear, a Laotian illegal immigrant convicted of two counts of homicide. Lohr has had a deportation order since back in that evil Republican Barack Obama administration in 2009. Aldrin Guerrero Munoz is also part of all of these sweeps. Mexican illegal immigrant. He was convicted of homicide and has had a deportation order back since 2015. Also remember that was the Barack Obama administration. We have another, maybe we should just be banning all people with the name Abdirashid, because I've never heard it before this moment, and there's two people in here named Abdirashid. This one's Abdirashid Mohammed Ahmed. He is a Somalian illegal immigrant convicted of manslaughter and has had a deportation order on him since back in 2022 under that evil Republican bastard Joseph Robinette Biden Jr. Mangon Kwal Manyang. Mangon Kwal Manyang. He is a Sudanese illegal immigrant convicted of attempt to commit homicide, weapons possession, and DUI. Honestly, comparing him to the other criminals seems unfair to our man Mangon Kwal Manyang. Or Manyang Kwal Manyang. One of the two. Now we've got Alair Gomez Lucas. He is a Guatemalan illegal immigrant convicted of negligent homicide with a vehicle and DUI. Lucas has had a deportation order since back in the time when we had a president who was sharp as a tack and outwitting his own 25-year-old interns, Joseph Robinette Biden Jr. And you might say, God, you know what, this whole segment here, you might say, hey, I know what you're saying. Like, I'm highlighting a lot. There haven't been any Swedish, white Swedish people in here. And that is true. And I will also say it's been a little sexist. We have not even featured one lady. But now we can change all that with Mariana Sia Canoe. Can you see a canoe? There's a canoe over there in the river. Mariana Sia Canoe. Mariana sees the canoe. Mariana Sia Canoe, an illegal immigrant from Sierra Leone. She was convicted of two counts of homicide. Canoe has a deportation order since that evil bastard Joe Biden and his Republican administration decided to deport her. Probably a mom, a PTA member from her community. She would help all over the place, and she probably started 5, 6, 12 different daycares, and we're going to throw her out of the community. And finally, we got another lady, Shui Hatu. Yes, Shui Hatu. That's the spelling on that, H-T-O-O. So Shui, S-H-W-E, H-T-O-O. I feel like it's, I'm just going to throw this out there, it's possible. And when my producer was putting this together, he fell asleep and just fell into the keyboard. Because I don't think S-H-W-E-H-T-O-O could possibly be a name. But Shui Hatu, get her out of here. Why? She's a Burmese illegal immigrant and convicted of negligent homicide. Does this mean all, are you saying, Stu, all immigrants are bad? No, I'm not saying all immigrants are bad. In fact, many immigrants are fantastic members of our society. People who come over here, let me throw this word out here to you, legally. Those people oftentimes are upstanding members of our community. And yes, you can actually find American citizens born here at birth that are way worse than many, many immigrants who come here legally. Illegally, you're starting off, your first step in the country is a crime. And that's a problem for me. It doesn't seem to be a problem for anybody on the left. It's a problem for me. But if you happen to be here and you do all these terrible things that I just highlighted, you'd think we'd have a little bit of unity in the fact that those people, at least those people, should be removed. And yet all these protests around the country are defending people just like this. These are the actual people they're picking up. These aren't, stand-in caricatures of people who we think might be, oh, they're just people who are working at Home Depot and they're standing out in front of Home Depot and they just want to do lawn work for the day. That's not to say that some of those people haven't also been deported. They have, of course, committed crimes by coming here illegally. That being said, the majority of the people that we're finding out about are people like this that have committed massive, real, problematic crimes. Real problems, things that have devastated families and communities, murders, rapes, assaults. These aren't things that should just be allowed to sort of flow. This isn't something that should be getting protests on behalf of their defense. These are protests that should happen and saying, how the hell did some of these people who committed crimes in 2002 and 2009 and 2012, how are they still here this whole time? That should be the outrage from our society. Not a bunch of Karens, the Karen Tafada, standing up to police officers, risking their own lives to protect murderers and rapists. But apparently, that's where we are in our society. Back in a second. I'm happy to welcome back Joy Pullman to the program. She's the executive editor for The Federalist, and she has a new piece out. It's called, It's Not Just Minnesota, The Vast Majority of Daycare is a Scam. Be sure to check that out. Joy, thanks so much for coming on back on the program. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
I like how you illustrated your article with a very sad child. So everyone now knows exactly what's going on in these daycares. And at least some of these daycares have children in them. I want to get to that in a moment. But let's start off with the Minnesota situation overall. And I realize I have to be specific here because there's about 50 things going on in Minnesota right now. But the daycare scam as we know it right now, as it relates to these Somali communities, you've been watching this story. What do you make of it?
Well, I think it is kind of an amazing illustration of the fact that the modern Democrat Party really is bankrolled by a system of interlocking frauds that basically happens. You know, they open the spigot of taxpayer money to favored special interest groups, and those favored special interest groups just roll that money right back into the Democrat Party to help them stay in power. We've known that's the case for the long time, you know, for institutions such as, for example, teachers unions. But at least they had to kind of launder that system through, you know, at least some kind of simulation of maybe giving people a benefit. There are actually schools with kids in them, you know, in the case of teachers unions, you know, but now, of course, in the case of these Somali daycares in Minnesota, there were no kids in the institutions. But that's actually my argument about daycare. Maybe better for the kids that way, because daycare actually damages kids and therefore society.
Yeah, that's where you take this piece. And it's an interesting one, because I think, you know, obviously the fraud is really, really bad. And that is a massive issue. But maybe the larger question in here is the idea of having a daycare paid for by the government a good idea in the first place, even if the kids are showing up? You looked at the numbers here, and it's not promising.
Well, I've actually been following this issue for almost 20 years, you know, and the research has been only increasing over time, showing that the more of time that children spend in non-parent care, the more their lifelong negative outcomes increase. And this is just shown by, you know, a number of actually in place long-term programs in places like Quebec in Europe, as well as in, you know, some programs, for example, in the United States here in Tennessee. You know, studies show that long-term kids who experience more time in non-parental care, that's from daycare through these so-called preschool programs, they are more likely to have behavioral problems that include and extend to committing more crimes, more aggression, more anxiety, lower academic outcomes. So really what's happening is that taxpayers and parents are not only not getting what we're promised that we're getting out of childcare programs, we're getting the opposite. Rather than actually helping the kids, as it's always sold as like a learning program or an improvement, it actually is making the kids learn less and have worse problems over the rest of their life. So that's why I call it a scam, is because we're getting the opposite of what we were promised that these programs would do for us.
Yeah, and these are not cheap programs. You mentioned a Heritage Foundation study, $250 billion we've spent, I believe the number was, on just Head Start. I mean, are we getting any sort of results from this at all?
No, in fact, like I said, negative outcomes. And I think people can just consult their own experience to understand why. Now, so if you've ever encountered, for example, one of these wonderful families that are foster care or adoptive parents, those children who are separated, you know, from their mothers, even if you adopt a baby right at birth, very frequently, normal thing for adoptive families, and they know this and they work on this and they help their child overcome it, but they have, you know, an attachment wound. They have difficulties, you know, that basically are happening from this primal wound of being separated from their mother. Again, even if wonderful, loving adoptive people take those children at birth, you know, and pour themselves into them as we know adoptive parents do, it is a lot to overcome. So the argument is, you know, we even know that's the case with adoptive and foster children. So why would we want to purposefully increase the amount of child separation from little babies and their mothers through taxpayer subsidized programs? You're increasing the amount of trauma that children have that they carry with them for the rest of their lives.
It's interesting. I have a friend who homeschools his kids, and he made an argument early on, which was like, hey, you know, it's kind of weird that we just raise these kids until they get to whatever age it is, 4, 5, 6 years old, and then we sort of turn them over to other people for 8 or 10 hours a day. I mean, isn't that kind of strange? And you know, it kind of is. It's an interesting thing we've attempted here. It seems to me, too, that the earlier that happens, that the more likely these outcomes are going to turn the negative direction. Is that what the data shows?
Absolutely. And it's very strong. And now I will say, now there are a lot of stories of this data being suppressed because most of the academic research, so-called research, is funded by the federal government, other taxpayer things. So, you know, people who are controlling the federal government do not want to have evidence showing that federal government programs that increase their domains and the funding they control actually hurt people, right? So, I mean, and you can look at my article. I have links to this, you know, if people who are really interested about that. But, you know, this is one of the many topics on which research, you know, has been controlled by political correctness, not allowed to show people, you know, a very obvious thing, again, which all of us with common sense can understand, is that child separation, little babies, toddlers separated from their mothers when they have known mother's heartbeat, her smell, her cadence, you know, from their very moment of conception, that's obviously going to be a difficult thing, you know, especially, you know, for particular children. And so the research has been suppressed showing that, but there is, you know, coming out that's really it's impossible to suppress all of it, especially when you look at long-term outcomes. outcomes of kids. And so as the years have gone by, that has come out, and it's just incontrovertible, you know, very hard to argue against. And so what we get are these smear campaigns or crappy research, research that's done that, you know, where they mess with kind of the figures. It's not high quality research to kind of continue this propaganda campaign to keep the spigots open and really, frankly, use the children as pawns to increase, you know, Democrat control of the economy and separate families from their children so they can't pass down their values to their children, as well as, you know, the children's sense of self, their strength and identity, and their ability to grow up and be, you know, self-directed adults who are confident for the rest of their lives.
You know, and obviously we're not trying to beat up on parents. That, you know, there are certain circumstances where these things might be necessary. But what a lot of what your piece focus on is whether the government should be involved in funding these places, especially if the outcomes are not positive. Over and over and over again, we see from people like, you know, Mom Donnie, for example, who is very much in favor of, you know, this universal health childcare situation. It's sort of like one of these big promises that tests pretty well politically. I mean, the polls show a lot of people support it. But, you know, when you're not getting these outcomes, you know, it doesn't make much sense. Politically, how do you push back against something like this, though, that does seem to be relatively popular?
Well, that's a great point. And I do think, you know, there are, of course, for example, adoption is a difficult circumstance, right, where we have a workaround for, you know, sometimes it is unavoidable that a child will be separated from his parents, right? But we should always try to have a society in which there is less of that. And, you know, that we can reserve, you know, so that what's available to kind of cover the neediest cases. But so my argument is for people who are able, that they should care for their children themselves as long as they can. And there's a lot of people who are using, you know, for example, I won't disclose names, you know, but a family medical practitioner of ours, you know, runs his own practice. His wife is a doctor. Their children are in daycare. You know, really, you know, they could have afforded to have mom pause her career for a couple of years and not put their child in daycare. So people like that. And I really think, you know, families who don't have any other choices, who are really, you know, pressed, they could consider, and we should make it more possible for them to do more family-oriented care rather than center-based care where you have 12 children per adult, where you have four babies per adult. You know, try to place your child with, you know, maybe swap childcare with another family in a similar situation, or find a family at church, you know, where they have, you know, the mother could take care of your baby, try to work part-time. There's a lot of workarounds that I just think if people understood child development, we should be seeking more of those, you know, and just doing more of what's better for babies. And that should always be the aim. And so that's, you know, I think returning to the political question, the truth is actually that majorities of women, you know, once women have a baby, we look at that and say, you have been inside my body, you know, for all of these, you know, times. You look at a 6-week-old baby, that's the earliest they sometimes are put in daycare, that's still a newborn, and you think, you can't even be apart from me for 15 minutes without getting fussy. How can it be 8-9 hours of a workday? It's impossible, right? So a mother's compassion is there. And polls really show that the majority of mothers and fathers who have young children, they strongly prefer family care if they have to have child, but they would really rather raise their own children themselves. You know, there's polling put out by the Institute for Family Studies, for example, showing that that is robustly the case, even with all of this childcare propaganda. And very important is this telling of women. You know, for example, I saw Kat Timpf, you know, a well-known Fox News comedian, entertainer. She said the other night she was scared to put her career on hold for just 6 weeks to be with her baby and her husband. She shouldn't feel that kind of pressure, right? And so that's a lot of pressure that our society needs to direct towards supporting women and babies, saying, Kat, you go ahead, take that time. Your baby needs it. Your baby needs you, you know, your career will be here, you know, you'll still be just as funny in 6 weeks or a couple of years. So those are all kinds of things that we can do politically to respond to the fact that women have these instincts, men have these instincts, we know the babies are helpless and they need us. And we just need societal and political change to support what people already want to do.
One more before you leave, kind of bringing it back to Minnesota. We've already seen some major fallout from the scandal. Tim Walz is no longer in the race. Thank God. I can't take any more of Tim Walz. Do you think this is something that has legs? You know, Walz made the argument when he was, you know, signing off from his campaign that this was just about him. Like, he's just, you know, they wanted to come after Tim Walz because they were, I guess, scared of his political future as a candidate. He didn't strike me that way at all, but apparently that's what he thinks, that we're going to just stop caring about this the second Tim Walz is out of the race. You think that's accurate? What's the fallout from all of this?
Well, I think you can just answer that right now by looking at the fact that blue states like California, Illinois, and New York will not turn over their data about their federally administered welfare programs, including the daycare programs like Minnesota had. So what do they have to hide, right? They're getting federal dollars for these programs. These are federal programs. They will not let the federal government have its own data about its own taxpayer programs happening in their states. That right there tells you that this is not at all limited to Minnesota. This is absolutely a nationwide blue state model. It makes one wonder if the entire way that many of these states became blue strongholds is frankly through corruption and fraud at the level of Minnesota's. But we'll have an entire year, many more years to continue the investigations and find out more about that.
Yeah, I'm sure you'll have a lot of coverage of the Federalist as well. I think Gavin Newsom is shaken a little bit on this because it seems like California's got the same problems and maybe multiplied by a bunch. Joy Palman, executive editor for The Federalist. You can check out her new piece. It's not just Minnesota. The vast majority of daycare is a scam. I will post a link over on my X account. Joy, thanks so much for taking the time and coming back on the program.
Thanks for having me.
Now, of course, you know, I want to spend some time talking about the NFL and everything that went on this weekend. And, you know, the Eagles obviously played. We'll get to that here in a second. I want to get to first, though, the Trump situation. He says he may veto an extension on Obamacare subsidies. He says that there's legislation that may come through. There's passed in the House already to extend these ridiculous subsidies. And he's saying he may very well veto the extension there. And that would be really positive, I think. I don't know. I'm a little concerned that, you know, that might not hold up, you know, with when all the if this actually does get passed. But I hope he will hold to that because it's obviously ridiculous. We do not need COVID era subsidies added on top of the already ridiculously generous with money that we don't have subsidies of Obamacare. We'll do that. Get to the Eagles here in a second. Trump is inclined to keep Exxon out of Venezuela after CEO's remarks. This is kind of an interesting story. So obviously the whole Venezuela thing is, I don't even know what to make of it, honestly, at this point. It's all obviously going to be judged by how this all turns out. One of the things Trump is trying to do is say, hey, let's get oil investment from our companies back in there, revitalize that industry. It will help Venezuelans. It'll help us. And that's all great. The Exxon CEO came out and said, his name is Darren Woods. He said, as you can imagine, re-entering into Venezuela a third time would require some pretty significant changes from what we've historically seen here and what the current state is. If we look at the legal and commercial constructs, frameworks in place today in Venezuela, it's totally uninvestable. And so significant changes would have to be made. Of course, that's true because they've had their assets stolen twice from them. So that's kind of a normal thing for a CEO to be concerned about. Trump didn't like those comments, thinking he might want to keep them out. Now, I mean, if Machado was in or something, you had someone who was an ally, maybe you'd be more inclined. But the fact that we're leaving, you know, big remnants of the Maduro regime in power, I can understand the skepticism, frankly. We'll get to the Eagles here in a second. Federal Reserve Chair Powell says DOJ has subpoenaed central bank, threatens criminal indictment. This is another situation that's interesting. It's kind of factoring in on the markets. I think there's a lot of openness to Trump being able to say, hey, you know, Letitia James, Fannie Willis, James Coney, these people who've made a career out of going after Trump to kind of have a little retribution, frankly. I think there's a lot of openness. Powell, though, just seems to have just not reduced rates as quickly as Trump wanted. I don't know that that's going to get the same amount of support. Get to one more story here before we'll get to the Eagles. Mattel leads an autistic Barbie doll line devoted to diversity and inclusion. And this is do we have the picture of this is autism Barbie, apparently. So there you go. It doesn't look like Barbie, but apparently has some autism related things. And now, geez, the music's on. We're out of time. Can't talk about the Eagles at all, as if the game didn't even occur. Oh, no.